What should I do with my tax refund? I'll answer that next on Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio with New York Times best-selling author and your host, Doug Andrew.
This is Doug Andrew speaking to you, our incredible national audience, from our three-dimensional wealth studios nestled at the base of the majestic Rocky Mountains. This show is about empowering you, people and organizations that want to optimize their assets, minimize taxes, and empower their authentic wealth. Well, folks, you may be aware that I have a YouTube channel. It's called Three Dimensional Wealth. It's free when you subscribe, but you may want to do that because I post an in-depth answer to a financial question almost on a daily basis. And this question is always asked at this time of the year. What should I do with my tax refund? Well, I'm going to talk about how to turn tax refunds into possibly an extra $1 million for you at retirement. So people say, no way. So let's go back and talk about the average tax refund per tax return in this country. In looking at the research, the average tax refund per return, so this could be married couples filing joint returns or single taxpayer, doesn't matter, it's per return, is approximately $3,000. Now, what's very amusing to me is how many Americans view their tax refund as a gift. Thank you, President Obama or President Trump or President Biden. Thank you so much. Have you ever noticed that if the government owes you a refund at the end of the year, it's called a refund because you overpaid. Have you noticed that the government doesn't pay you interest on the money that they collected more than what you owe? But if you fail to pay them, and if you're self-employed on a quarterly basis, your estimated quarterly amount, they have the right, of course, to penalize you and also charge you interest. So I think the big fallacy for many Americans is they will say, well, I consider my tax refund every year as my forced savings account. This is the way that I am forced to save money, and then they plan to consume with their tax refund. What are they going to spend it on? So my first message is, don't consume, conserve. Now, how do you do that? So many times people go, oh, golly, it looks like we're going to get a $5,000 tax refund. We're going to go out and buy a new ATV or a new jet ski or whatever, and they consume with that tax refund. Now, if you understand compound interest and how it can grow through the years, let me share with you an actual fact. The average tax refund per return is, again, $3,000 in America. Now, if you were, let's say, age 30, and if you were to work until you were age 67, okay, that's 37 years. Many people are working until age 67 because that's when now Social Security begins to kick in and so forth. So during that 37-year period, if you had an average refund of just $3,000, and it usually goes up as the years go on, if you socked away that $3,000 into my favorite instrument, which compounds tax-free, even if you put it into a traditional IRA or 401k, it would compound and grow, but you'd have to pay tax on it at the end of the day if it's in a traditional IRA or 401k. I would not recommend that because tax rates are not going down. You could use a Roth, okay? But I've never owned an IRA 401k, never will. I've never owned a Roth IRA 401k, never will, because my favorite vehicle, which I call the laser fund, accumulates my money tax-free, and I can access the money tax-free at the end of the day. But in the laser fund, I have earned an average rate of return of 9.62% for 40 years. Now, let's just round that down to 9.6. If you were to earn 9.6, and you can join us for educational sessions to see actual historical rates of return, for many, many thousands of people who have what we call the laser fund that have averaged over 9.6% in many 10 and 20 year periods. So this is realistic, folks. $3,000 a year earning 9.6% will grow in 37 years by age 67 to an extra $897,375. But you know what would be better than waiting until the end of the year for your forced savings where you're earning zip in interest while the government is using your money? And what if they can't afford to give you a refund? People say, what? No way. No, California. California was in trouble a few years ago, and they had to issue IOUs for several months because they didn't have the money to give people their tax refunds who overpaid. So I would rather not give it to the government in the first place because they're paying you zip in interest. So if you're consistently getting $3,000 a year in a tax refund, what does that equal per month? $250 a month. All you do is change the W-4 withholding amount. You add another allowance so that they don't withhold it out of your paycheck. Now, sometimes people freak out and go, well, I don't want to have to owe anything at the end of the year. Well, you can calculate this better than consistently giving the government an extra $3,000 and have it be refunded to you year after year. In other words, get that $250 back a month in your paycheck. If you're paid biweekly or semi-monthly, $125 extra into your paycheck, but don't consume. Conserve it. Sock it away. Here's why. If you were to set aside $250 per month, every month, instead of waiting till a year later to come up with $3,000 to drop it in, at the same 9.6% compounded interest rate, guess what the difference is 37 years later? It would grow to $1,043,546.59, and that can be tax-free. That's an extra $150,000 by changing your withholding and having $250 extra a month from the very first month instead of waiting until the end of the year and having $3,000 in a tax refund. Even if you did sock it away and save, you're not doing it the smart way. So change it and get the extra amount and then set up a system where it automatically is out of sight, out of mind. If you do owe some tax or whatever, you can always access money to pay that. But folks, as long as you pay in tax approximately what you owed the year before, then even if you owe more, there's not going to be a penalty. The IRS cannot penalize you if you've been paying them based upon your traditional or normal earnings, okay? And that is particularly true for business owners. Now, if you're doing math in your head right now, and you know how to, of course, extrapolate from what I'm sharing with you, if $250 a month socked away each month for 444 months from age 30 to age 67, if you could earn 9.6% interest, and of course, I prefer tax-free, that will grow to $1,043,500. Now, let's say you're getting $6,000 a year in a tax refund. So that would be nearly $2.1 million extra dollars. Well, it also means that if you could sock away $500 a month for 37 years into what I call the laser fund, you would have $2.1 million totally tax-free. And I can show you how that $2 million can generate between $160,000 to $200,000 a year of tax-free cash flow and income from age 67. If you live to be 120, just constantly give you that cash flow without depleting the principal, and compare that to socking away the same $500 a month or $6,000 a year into a traditional IRA or 401k invested in the market, which Dalbar says most people really only average about 3.5%. But even if you earned 9%, you're only netting 6% after tax. So which is better? So I don't care if you're coming up with money to save, whether it's from tax refunds. I hope you're beginning to learn, don't consume, conserve. But also, every dime that you're contributing to a 401k, especially that you're not being matched on, I would not put it into a tax-deferred IRA or 401k thinking you're going to be in a lower tax bracket when you retire. I would definitely recommend that you look at socking away every penny over and above what your employer is matching you if they have a matching program on your IRA 401k contributions. Usually it's a company-sponsored 401k. But if you're not getting a decent rate of return, I've had many, many people redirect the entire contribution, whether it's $500 a month, $1,000 a month. You do the math. It can grow to over $4 million bucks if you're earning that rate of return.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
Watch out. Real estate tax changes are coming. Welcome back. This is Doug Andrew. If you're just joining us, this is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio, where I'm passionate about providing you with up-to-date information and insights into opportunities that maybe you didn't know existed before, and also what to watch out for. Now, under the Biden administration, President Biden has announced several intentions, and it's very likely that with the House of Representatives in his majority favor and the Senate, any tie votes being broken by Vice President Harris, that a lot of these income tax changes are going to pass. So many times we've talked about income tax and inheritance tax, corporate tax, but the taxes that affect those of you who own real estate, watch out. And here's why. We have a big change coming in capital gains tax, and Biden wants to get rid of the step-up in basis on long-term capital gains. So if you've been doing 1031 exchanges, watch out. That could be going out the window. It also comes over to the inheritance tax. Those of you in California, you had recently passed Proposition 19, which sort of took over or replaced Prop 13. And we have many states who are hard up for tax revenue that are considering value-added tax, the VAT tax type of an idea with your real estate. So I'll explain all of these because this is major, folks. Now, let me just show you the impact of what President Biden is proposing for capital gains tax. If you don't know what a capital gain is, that is when you, maybe your parents, purchased an investment, whether it's stocks, gold, silver, but many times we're talking about real estate, years ago, a rental property, let's say. And they bought it originally, let's say, for $250,000, a rental home. And that property has been appreciating, let's say, at 5% a year. That means it's going to double in value every 14.4 years, so about every 15 years. So what they bought 15 years earlier for $250,000 is now worth $500,000. But if they bought it 30 years ago, it doubles again from $500,000 to a million. And many of you in California know, like I've seen, people in the Bay Area who bought homes for $230,000 35 years ago that are now worth $4.8 million, and I'm talking about a five-bedroom home. Now, when you're in a situation where you constantly have your property continue to appreciate in value, or if you sold the property and you wanted to push the capital gain forward, you would do a 1031 exchange. And sometimes it's just going from the frying pan into the fire. You're trying to get rid of a headache, but you still have a new headache because maybe you're sick and tired of taking out the trash, fixing toilets, evicting tenants, and so forth. But people try to avoid paying a capital gain tax because the property is appreciated. And so they keep deferring by doing 1031 exchanges. 1031 is a section of the Internal Revenue Code that if you buy a like property of equal or greater value, you can put off paying the capital gain tax. So people have been doing this for years. So let's say your folks did that, and now they have this rental property that's worth $1 million. Now, oftentimes, many people wait until they pass away to let their children or maybe a charity receive this rental, because the charity or the children inheriting the rental property have been able to get a step up in basis. That means that if they choose to sell it, they don't have to pay a tax on the gain, which is not calculated based upon the original purchase price of $250,000 if it's real estate. Most people depreciate that down over a 27-year period or what have you, whatever your accountant is doing there, so that it's down to the value of the land. So the capital gain tax would be calculated on the entire, you know, let's just say $1 million gain. Well, capital gain taxes, I've always felt were somewhat unfair because you're really paying a tax on inflation. And that's a little bit unfair in my mind because inflation is what caused most of that appreciation. I would say at least 50 to 60% of it. So if inflation was at 3% and the place was appreciating at 5%, 60% of that appreciation was just inflation. Why does the government want to tax you for the cost of living that went up? That's unfair. So that's why most of the time under Republican Congress or under Republican tax law, they will have a break for capital gain taxes. And under Trump, that maxed out at 20%. It starts out at zero, but whenever you sell a property or a highly appreciated asset, that gain is added into your income. I know because I sold a commercial building here about a year and a half ago, and that entire gain added on top of my income to push me to the highest tax rate. So at the highest tax rate, I had to pay a 20% capital gain tax to the federal government. I think there's another 2.8% on top of that for the Obamacare surtax. And then you have the state. And, of course, the state I live in has a capital gain tax also. California does, and many states do. So I ended up shelling out about 28% in taxes when I sold this property. Now, that's a long-term capital gain tax instead of ordinary income. Well, what Biden wants to do is change it back to the ordinary income rate. So the 20%, he wants to take that up to 39.6%. So it's almost double. So you'll have to pay double the tax because he wants to consider that ordinary income. And then he's thinking about doing away with the step up in basis. So let's go back to that example. Under Trump, if you inherited $1 million rental property from your folks who had depreciated it down because they bought it 30 years ago, and you only had to pay tax on what you would sell it for over and above what it was worth the day you inherited it, because you got to step up in basis. So let's say you sold it for $1,100,000, you'd only have to pay a 20% tax on that last 100,000 or 20 grand. Under Biden, he wants to do away with the step-up in basis. So in that same scenario, if you sold it for $1,100,000, you would have to pay 39.6%, nearly 40% on the entire million. That's 400,000 versus 20,000 under Trump. This is huge. If you haven't noticed, Uncle Sam is always there with his hand out whenever money is transacted, okay? Uncle Sam wants a piece of it when you earn it, when you invest it, when you save it, when you withdraw it, when you die, when you sell anything, and when you retire and you begin to take money out of IRAs and 401ks, you must pay the tax. And so that capital gain tax is going to be a huge hit for many, many people that, you know, they were planning on getting a step up in basis. Well, you add that on top of the inheritance tax, because if you leave it behind to your children, of course, the inheritance tax, he wants to take from about 40% up to 67%. because tax revenuers love to tax people who are sort of 6 feet under because they can't complain about it. And the children just have to accept whatever they get. So you have the inheritance tax, and sometimes people get confused with how that relates to the capital gain tax and so forth. Your accountant can help you calculate this, but he's going to get you one way or another, especially on real estate. Those of you in the great state of California, under Prop 19, if you were to inherit a rental property from your folks, you cannot get grandfathered into the property tax exemption on that unless you use it as a primary residence for yourself. If it's a secondary residence or a rental property, you are now going to get a huge property tax hike. States like California are looking at a value-added tax. Every year, they want to tax you on what your property has appreciated by.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.